At Subway, start 2010 right with surprisingly low-fat choices. The Piled High Subway Club or Turkey Melt, fresh toasted under bubbly cheese. Both are part of a Subway Fresh Fit meal, a simple way to enjoy eating better. Subway, eat fresh. The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Yeah. Welcome to the BS Report. We're going to do a two-parter today, the Mega Playoff Podcast, splitting it up. Cousin Sal and Mike Lombardi from National Football Post in part one. And then in part two, Aaron Schatz from FootballOutsiders.com and Chad Millman from ESPN The Magazine. I'm in a great mood today. I've been in charge of my son for the last 5 days, and he wakes up at like 5 every morning like a COO or a CEO, whatever. And today he got up at 7:15. So I have a hop in my step. Cousin Sal, how great is it when the kids sleep late?
It's pretty good. Were you out in the park with your son when the Patriots were playing? Because you really do seem too happy to be starting off this way.
I was sad last night, but getting that sleep, I feel invigorated.
All right.
I should mention that you're on the Subway Fresh Take hotline.
Yeah.
And you come on the BS Report every week. So it's funny you mentioned the park because I had a little conundrum yesterday.
What up?
I was ready to leave from that Pats game. I was ready to actually take my son to a park because I had him like lined up watching Dora and all these shows while I was watching the football game, thinking that, I was going to have to hunker down. And within 40 minutes, you knew the game was over. But yeah, at 24-7, when we had the ball, we were going toward midfield, had the 4th-and-2, same situation as the Indy game, and they punted this time.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I said go for it. We were saying the same thing, like just go for it here. Look, this is you have touchdowns to make up here, not field goals, and you can't punt it away. So.
Well, and the other part is, you know, you got to do something to change the momentum, and we saw it happen in the Green Bay game. The next game, they went for the onside, which hard to believe Arizona wasn't kind of at least expecting the possibility of that. But
should have been about 25 or 30 yards closer than they were.
They're running back. The guy hasn't even kicked it yet. Yeah. But I thought the Packers proactively tried to change the destiny of what was happening to them, whereas the Patriots really rolled over. And I was embarrassed. The
it's
fans
hard
were
to
embarrassed.
Embarrass completely because the Ravens' defense is much more solid than Arizona.
Yeah, true.
But yeah, you're right. You're right. The Pats boy, they took themselves right out of that. And, like, we were even talking about, it's funny you bring up the park, and what do you do after your team's getting blown out in the first quarter? Like, you have to either pretend that you have to be miserable the rest of the day and watch the game, or you kind of, like, the wife is like, hey, what are you going to do now? We can make plans. We can go to lunch.
Yeah, yeah.
We were wondering about, like, the players in the locker room. Do you think they're calling their wives and, mistresses and be like, yeah, we can make plans for next week? And I bet, like, at halftime, I bet a lot of that goes on.
I was holding out hope for one reason, two reasons. One, I'm pathetic, and two, it did seem like if they just went no huddle and just started throwing every down, that Ravens secondary is not that good, and maybe they could get back in the game. But the bottom line is Brady's been hurt for a month and a half, and he was awful. He was absolutely horrible in that game, and I was ashamed of Nance and Sims that they didn't at least point out, like, hey, either this guy is really hurt, or he has had one of the biggest declines in recent playoff history, because he was worse than Carson Palmer the day before. And the announcer's just not acknowledging.
Or what? But yeah, Sims really didn't. I thought Sims would be all over him, too. Did you or would you have booed if you were there? You wouldn't have booed, right?
I'm not a fan of booing the home team. I just don't. I don't see how it's productive. So it's basically, it's not like they don't already know that they stink. Mm-hmm. And what you're telling them is, yes, you stink, and also we're only going to support you when things are good.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was a good decade. This was obviously a transition year for this team. I'm kind of mad at myself, though. I got to say, Sal. I definitely talked myself into us winning this game, and deep down, I've known this whole season that this team just wasn't that good. And, you know, you can talk yourself into the mystique and, Brady, Belichick. But, you know, but Belichick's 57 and Brady's a guy with broken ribs and a bad knee and he's 32 years old. And, you know, I think it could be probably over.
Well, I mean, you just figure you knew that they weren't going to go to the Super Bowl. Like, well, any team could have a great run and everything, but we figured that they'd get past this game, right? The 8-0 at home and everything.
Yeah,
home.
I talked myself into it.
Yeah, but we thought they were at least good enough to go to, where would they go, San Diego next?
Yeah, I thought they were going to get killed by San Diego, and that's how this would end. I didn't expect them to go down, you know. Well, first of all, when you start the game off giving up an 83-yard run, you almost kind of know it's over right there.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I thought they rolled over. I really
they're
did.
They're kind of similar teams. Like, they're aging teams. Like, the Ravens' defense is aging, but still productive, tough players. Same with the Patriots. Maybe more on the offensive side. They're tough. And like, but Ravens filled the gaps nicely. Like, you know, whatever. I'm not a big Joe Flacco fan, but he does a fine job. And, you know, getting that tepid running back, that Ray Rice, he's going to give everyone a hard time. So, and then getting up on that lead with a ferocious defense like they have, it's just really tough to come back.
I felt like Edelman was the only guy who really seemed to give a crap that the season was ending. Everybody else seemed like they were fine with it. And you know what else? That game could have been a lot worse. Because it was 21-0, and the Ravens got that turnover, and they had the ball like inside the 15, first down. And they ended up settling for a field goal. It was 24-0. The only touchdown we scored was on that stupid guy lost a punt in the sun and it bounced, and if the Ravens had challenged it, they just would have gotten the ball back.
Right.
And that really could have been like a 45-0 game.
Yeah.
You know, I'm reading the articles from back home, and people are like, don't rush to judgment and say this is the end of an era. How is this not the end of an era? This team got shellacked at home in a playoff game in round one, and they look terrible, and I'm not sure who the foundation blocks are for, you know, this next decade. We got a 32-year-old quarterback. Who are our franchise guys? Who are the guys that you can, you know, I look at the Ravens and it's like, yeah, they do this, this, and this. They have Ray Rice. They have Flacco. He's young. Who am I looking at on this Patriots team?
I don't know. I mean, from a fan's perspective, this Jared Mayo, has he fallen off a little bit, or is he like, he seems to be a big name, but some say he's maybe not as tough-nosed linebacker as everyone remembers the Patriots to have. So.
He got hurt. And and he definitely wasn't as productive this year as last year. I think he got better as the year went along. But, you know, I guess they have him and Ty Warren. On offense now you have Welker, who's coming off an ACL and probably doesn't – if he plays next year, he's not going to be 100%. I don't know what to expect from Brady anymore.
Well, that's, you know? I think you need to fill in a running back a little. Like, some teams like Carolina has two really good running backs. Like,
right.
Patriots should get one, like, just to take the pressure off Brady. He can only really do so much.
And this is
Moss has taken off 70% of the play, so.
Yeah. Moss is now running like Roy Williams, where he gingerly runs down the field, catches the ball, and falls down.
He needed to run like the Roy Williams from Saturday night, but, yeah.
The biggest mistake that the Patriots made is how they handled the running back situation the last 5 years. Because they pushed their chips in the middle with Maroney, who's just not good. And they had multiple drafts to kind of say, you know what, let's take a mulligan on Maroney and get somebody else. And, you know, even last year, they could have had Sean Green. They had multiple picks.
Yeah.
You know, Sean Green, I thought, was the difference in that Bengals game.
That's true, yeah.
They could add Ray Rice the year before. They could add Mojo the year before that.
It wasn't a priority. It just never really was with them.
No, because they're playing by these old rules where, we won a Super Bowl with Antoine Smith. We don't need a running back. But, you know, you kind of do need a running back who's that change of pace guy who can catch the ball out of the backfield and keep teams on their toes. And,
I agree.
I don't know. You have one with Felix Jones.
Yeah.
I thought he was the difference in that Eagles game.
At points, we have three good running backs. If they stay healthy, you know, Tashard Choice is a good, you know, third down back, third and short back, and Barber grinds it out. Yeah, it's nice. I mean, yeah, like in a game where teams have two good running backs, the Patriots are now starting from scratch, and that seems to be the difference to me.
Well, it seems like in this day and age, you need to be able to throw the ball, and you need to have a running back who can make the defense not know what's going to happen.
Sure.
Are they going to run it? Or are they going to screen to this guy? Or what's? And that you look at the way that Dallas is set up, and they just seem to have. If Roy Williams was better, it would be almost like the perfect type of offense that you'd want for 2010.
It's nice. It's real
Arizona, rough. I thought. You know, yesterday I thought was, you know, they had the Beanie Wells and Hightower. They could throw the ball to those guys. They can go downfield. But now, from what you saw in round one, do you buy my thesis that this is a pass-first league? Because we saw teams won with the run in round one. Was that just a fluke because of the teams? Or is that do you think it's we're back to old-school rules?
I think you throw Arizona and New Orleans. I don't think we're back to old-school running by any means. I think you're going to see Dallas and Minnesota pass, and, you know, the Jets game will be a little different maybe. But and Arizona and New Orleans will be like that is – I'll buy your thesis. What are you selling your thesis for, by the way?
Right now I have to pay people to take it.
But I'm surprised that teams like Arizona and New Orleans have gotten this far with pass happy and pretty much garbage defense. Although I guess New Orleans is a little better against the pass, and here they are playing in the middle of January. But you definitely need a solid running back, I think, to advance towards February.
Well, now we have the pass first teams are in round two. Because now you have Indy, you have San Diego, you have New Orleans, you have Minnesota, you have now Dallas making it to the second round, you have Arizona making it to the second round. Those are six teams that, if they're not throwing the ball well, probably aren't going to win.
Baltimore and the Jets are the exception. They're gonna
yes.
run it down your throat. Yeah.
Baltimore and the Jets want to have situations like what they were able to pull off in round one. And you know what? Palmer was just horrific. I mean, he couldn't have been worse. We had a little fantasy banquet, but I came home and watched that game again to make sure I didn't miss anything. And Palmer was just horrible. I mean, he single-handedly lost the game.
If the Jets defense was that good, because his bailout play was that, you know, 6-yard crossing route over the middle, and it was always covered. I mean, even if the guy made a great catch, it was always covered. And I can't believe, and I don't even know what you do with Ocho Cinco, because that's abysmal for 2 weeks in a row to be shut down like that. But,
well, he can at least try to pretend that he was hurt. I'm not sure he was. It seemed like the key play for the Bengals was when Caldwell fell on his head right in the beginning because he was never the same after that. But I thought Palmer – I didn't feel like you know the Jets' defense was covering well, but I felt like Palmer had time. He was just missing guys. He was,
I know.
And who – you know, we haven't seen the Bengals a lot the last few weeks because – maybe they've been on the small screen or whatever. For some reason, I never noticed that he was playing with a cast on his left hand. Brad pointed that out on Saturday. I was like, where'd that cast come from?
Yeah, he's like handing off with his feet or something. It was weird how he was doing it. And then now we find out he's having surgery. So.
Yeah, it was great. Just get to find that out after the fact. So anyway, that was a game where I thought the quarterbacks were going to decide it. And who knew? The Sanchez.
Yeah, well, it's funny. The franchise was Shane Graham, and he missed the whole field goal. And the Sanchez came through.
Yeah, and plus the Sanchez's numbers would have been better if Braylon Edwards held on to that long pass.
True,
he would have been 13 for 15. How did you feel about your team? Philly rolled over, I thought.
Well, I did too. I'm like, you know, now everyone's coming up to me like, I really think you're the team to beat. I think the Cowboys are the team to beat, but. We have the Eagles' number. We're playing well on both sides of the ball. But we still, like in a month, at least a month, we haven't played a team that runs the ball well. And that obviously comes to an end this week with Adrian Peterson and Chester Taylor. And that's what worries me. We're not going to be able to be in the quarterback's and Brett Favre's face as much when we have to worry about the run and some middle screens and stuff. But I do like the way we're moving the ball offensively. I really do.
Yeah. And I was shocked by Philly's game plan because Dallas went in that game clearly saying, we are not going to give up one long pass in this game. You can dink and dunk us to death, run the ball for 4 yards a pop, fine. But you are not throwing the ball over the top on us. And they didn't, but yet they kept trying.
Yeah.
And I felt like they could have run the ball on them. I would have run McCoy. I thought they could have had long drives, and it was just like they panicked.
I thought they could have tried. I mean, that would have been a better offensive game plan, but they really were going for the home run ball. And I got to say, we have a guy, Gerald Sensabaugh, back there, and he does a great job with that. Like, we don't get beat up top much anymore now that the other Roy Williams is gone in Cincinnati and then was hurt for them, didn't even really play for them. But yeah, that definitely helped a lot.
Tough gambling loss for you yesterday. You had Green Bay teased with the – over, but you had a high over. You were giving 103, which you teased down to 97. You didn't cover that. That must have sucked.
You know what? I said to everyone in the room when it went to overtime, I said, all right, the over-under for overtime is 3.5. Which way do you go? And everyone's like, oh, I go under. And not only did the ending play make it over, but the the pass that Rodgers missed to Jennings. That would have been a 6-pointer too. So
that was a much tougher play than how they actually lost.
Yeah.
Because Rodgers was hitting that throw the whole game, and then the one time he has it, and he threw like, I thought Sims did a nice job. Not Sims, Aikman did a nice job of pointing out. Like, he threw, like, a line drive. Let your guy run under that one, Aaron.
Yeah, I know it.
That was tough. That was an exciting game, though. I mean, the first three games were so sucky. And, like, really, in each of the first three games, you knew in 5 minutes who was going to win. Right. And in that game, it kind of felt the same way. And then all of a sudden, Green Bay just kept clawing back. But
yeah, they never really had any game. But they're fun to watch. But they probably went about as far as they should.
For someone who went 0-4 in playoff picks, I lost surprisingly little money this weekend.
Yeah, you did well.
I had a terrible feel for the slate, as we found out. Let's talk about
that. I went 1-3, and only because I had the Cowboys as a bet with my heart there. But anyway.
I'm going to have to open up a whole new playoff manifesto that includes never bet on Donovan McNabb and Andy Reid ever.
Yeah.
That's one of them. I will say, though, that the one time I felt good about the Philly pick was when they showed the split screen of Andy Reid and Wade Phillips. And it was the career playoff records, and Wade Phillips was 0-4. And he was just staring out in the field like he was watching like a chicken get slaughtered or something.
I know.
And I was thinking, I feel good about the Eagles, Wade Phillips.
By the way, he's not going anywhere, and you printed in your column, but I had said to you that we stayed good just long enough to stay out of the Mike Shanahan sweepstakes, but I really feel he's staying now. But
you could be in the Cowher sweepstakes if you have a stink bomb this week, but I like the Minnesota matchup for you. I really do. I think that's...
I'm more nervous about this one than New Orleans. I don't know. Again, it's the running thing. We haven't seen a runner in 6 weeks. So.
All right, well, let's do the lines. I already mailed you my picks, but we'll do it the old-fashioned way.
So here it is. You're 9-7-2. The winner gets to smash the loser with the 6-foot sub at the end of the year. So I basically have to win the next 3 weeks.
Did you look at my picks, or you don't know what I picked?
I don't know what you picked yet. We have been sending each other picks with the subject, do not open until Christmas or whatever. I don't know.
I say one of them, I said it was a line for the game that was already decided, but then I also sent you the line for, what was it?
Colts-Jets?
Yeah, I sent a Colts-Jets, assuming the Pats are going to win, and you emailed me back like, wow, that was some wishful thinking. I was like, yeah, it was.
I didn't know if you figured they were definitely in or what.
Yeah. I drank the Kool-Aid for the last time with the Belichick Brady era, I think.
All right, here we go. Arizona-New Orleans, Saturday afternoon game.
I struggled on this one. It's between 7 and 7.5. And I'm going to go, because the Cards defense looks so horrible, I'm going to go Saints by 7.5.
All right. Well, okay. Great. So you get this one. I don't know. I initially thought it would be 7. I considered – the line is 7. So, but I initially thought it would be 7, and I considered the combination of how poorly the Saints played and down the stretch with the momentum Arizona had. I knocked it down a half a point. And then I knocked it down another half a point for Kurt Warner. So I said 6. And so you're going to get that one. You were closer.
7. So that's a possible teaser.
It's 7, yeah. Well, we'll get to that. I don't know what to do with these teams.
Okay.
I'll tell you one thing, though. The four games all went over, and I think this one is 57. Everyone's going to pound the over in this one. It's sort of like everyone had Green Bay yesterday. Like, it just can't happen, right? Although it was very close.
Right.
But I see this going under somehow.
Well, you know what is not a bad bet is the first half under when everybody likes over.
Yeah.
A couple slow starts, people panic, and then there seems to be the flurry of points in the second half.
Yeah. All right. So you're up 1-0.
That's Baltimore an interesting line.
Saturday night, Baltimore at Indy.
Shoot, I'm trying to remember what I mailed you for this. Oh, I remember.
I could look here.
That's all right. I said... because of Joe Flacco, who, let's be honest, did not look good on Sunday.
Uh-huh. Well, he threw like 10 passes, right?
Yeah, but he...
four for ten? What was it?
I don't know. For somebody, the Pats were stacking the line, and he had a lot of room to operate. He had a couple completions, but I thought he had a couple bad plays.
I thought they were supposed to drop passes, the Ravens. They had some third down conversions that I was surprised about. Derek Mason, like, you know, all.
They had one where the guy jumped up and caught it. I mean, they haven't made that catch all year.
It was weird.
I have Indy by six in this one.
Okay. I'm proud because I nailed this one, and I had seven, and then I chopped it down a half point for the momentum and the stingy defense. I said 6.5, and as I look now, it's still 6.5. So we're tied at one.
Wow. 6.5, huh?
Yeah. I like the Colts, right?
I got to say, that's a weird line. You don't see the 6.5 too often. You see or the 7. You don't rarely see the 6.5.
Didn't even start at 7 or anything. So, but I just think it's one of those games we say Peyton Manning's the best, and then like during the week we're convinced somehow they're going to lose. And then we watch the game. It's like, oh, yeah, that's right. Peyton Manning is the best.
Well, I got to say, you know, the rule around two is not to get too excited about how somebody looked in round one. Mm-hmm. And in this case, you have three teams that might have looked better than they are in round one, the Jets, the Ravens, and the Cowboys.
Right. I mean, it should be easy to say after Saturday, do both one seeds advance, New Orleans and Indy. And like, right, that could be a good teaser. Shouldn't that win, for crying out loud?
Yeah, I don't know why Baltimore scares me.
See? This is it.
I thought they looked really good in that game. I mean,
yeah, they did.
Pats were horrible, but I thought they looked fast. They looked well-coached. They looked hungry. I'll talk myself out of it. But, man, I was really impressed by them.
I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, oh, this is, I really wanted the Jets to go to Indy because that would have been a gimme game. You know, the Colts would have taken it like, hey, you're only in the playoffs because of us, and we're going to put you in your place. But Baltimore, let's not forget, almost lost to the Raiders. They almost blew that playoff clinching game. So I don't know. I don't know how much they get up for it.
So that's a Saturday night game.
That's Saturday night.
Well, now, as we discussed, this would be every year since 2002, there's been a memorable Saturday night game.
That's
and
true.
I would say that last Saturday night's game did not qualify. It was horrible.
Yeah. Well, maybe it'll be memorable because it'll be the first time we've cashed in on a teaser by Saturday.
That could be a good one. I don't know. I think Indy's going to be rusty. Even, you know, even with the Pats, when we had our good run back when we were good, it's kind of sad to say. But the Saturday night game, we always started out slow.
Yeah.
So it was that little rust from, you know, you're not really in total, we got to win this frame of mind for like 4 weeks. It's tough to bounce back into that.
All right. We'll see. Yeah, it should be a good one. And then Dallas at Minnesota, Sunday afternoon, early game.
I went back and forth between 3 and 2.5. I said 3. I think it settles at 2.5, though.
Wow. We both said 3, and it's 2.5.
Oh, it's 2.5 now?
It's 2.5 now. Yeah,
wow.
It opened at 2.5. They don't want to give. They're saying Dallas is better, right?
I mean, 2.5 is a very fair line. It's reminiscent of the Jets-Bengals where, you know, the Bengals, it's not quite a even spread, but the home team gets 3. But the road team's a little bit better.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's a fair line.
I'm excited. I know I'll be a basket case when it rolls around, but I don't want to say it's gravy, but really just beating the Eagles is big for me. It really, like, I knew we were better. I was like, this is a game we could blow.
Yeah.
Tony Romo just really never going to win a playoff game. And I'm just glad we got by that.
Question.
Yeah.
How many Dallas fans at that game? Game round two.
What do you? Oh, in this one.
Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting.
Minnesota, notorious for not selling out stuff.
I didn't even think about that. Marion Barber from Minnesota.
It was either a year ago or 2 years ago when they had Tavares at home that I think they had like 20,000.
I think it was against Eagles, right? Or was
Hey, Joe Mead.
Yeah.
Joe Mead?
Yes.
Can you Google Minnesota and, you know, not so or unsold tickets for the Tavares Jackson game last year? I think it was the Eagles.
Yeah, he's going to nail this.
No, he's going to do it.
You me?
All right.
Because I vaguely remember that game having like 15,000 Eagles fans there.
Let's help him with the spelling of Minnesota.
Because did you hear the Green Bay fans in Arizona last night?
Yeah, that's one thing. Well,
they had like one third of the crowd.
And it shouldn't be like that anymore. No. Arizona went to the Super Bowl. Like, shouldn't they have enough?
Well, there's a dirty little secret about the Pats game yesterday. They didn't, I don't think, first of all, I don't think it was a sellout. I think they bought the tickets, but supposedly a lot of season ticket holders didn't get the tickets.
What do you mean they didn't get it?
Like a few thousand. You have your option to
mail you
the playoff tickets.
They chose to decline.
Yeah, they declined. They were like, ass. We're this team's not going to do anything. I decline.
Wow.
And I heard from a couple people that there wasn't like as much traffic as usual going to the game, and the tailgate wasn't as good and all that stuff. So.
Wow. All right.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. Come one, come all to Minnesota if you're a Cowboys fan. Please.
I think you could have a lot of fans there. I would say you could at least match what happened with Packers carts.
That'd be great. That'd be great. All right. Well, so now here's how it is with us. We're 2-2. So whoever gets this wins, and I can't afford to lose.
So if I push, I win. But I already gave you my pick.
Yeah. Well, I haven't looked. I haven't looked at that one. It's Jets at San Diego.
Oh, I can't remember if I did 8 or 8.5. It was I went back and forth, and I went back and forth, and I went back and forth. You might have to check.
All right, let me look here.
I think I did 8.5, but I'm not positive.
All right, I went 8.5, which is interesting here. I went 8.5.
It's just dramatic.
And the line is 7.5.
Oh.
If you went 8, you won.
So I win either way.
Well, we could tie, right?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I went...
You went 8.
Oh!
That's it.
I went back and forth on that for like an hour. That's it. I get to beat you up with a sub.
I can't freaking believe it.
What do we play for? Do you rest your starters the next 2 weeks? What do you do?
How did you... You were in a clear mind to pick that line almost exact. You were off like 1.5 points in 4 games. Really, the Patriots got slaughtered, and you had a clear mind to pick these.
All I have now is picking the Lions, because I apparently can't pick the actual winners. That's pretty good.
I think there's some cheating involved. I think
of
the Bill Belichick highest level, there's some cheating involved here.
Stop it. I'll tell you one person who's relieved is my mother, because she really thought you were going to knock me unconscious with whatever subject.
Really?
Yeah. This is great.
Now investigate this further. I want to know about this. Who is this guy you have? The new odds guy you have on. All of a sudden,
Chad Millman.
You have Norman. What's it, Norman Chad from the poker? He's the poker guy.
Chad Millman. Yeah.
That's what a coincidence it is. As you have your book tour for 8 weeks, and I'm kicking the crap out of you. I'm like, oh, Chad Millman, come on. You can give me give me some inside info when the lines come out, and I'll put you on my podcast.
Who are you doing? Black Robbie Benson. I like it.
Yeah, whatever. I'm pissed. All of a sudden, this bromance with Chad Millman.
Wait a second.
Figure this out.
Why wasn't 8 a logical pick for that? It was either going to be 8 or 8.5.
I don't know.
It couldn't be 9.
I can't believe this.
I thought the Jets actually would get some popular momentum. I got to say, I think that worked out fantastic for the Jets.
How? I'm getting hit with a sub. How is this fantastic?
No, I mean, like, I don't think they would have beaten Indy.
Yeah.
But I think they match up with San Diego. Like,
yeah,
San Diego throws the ball. That's what they do. They can't run. The Jets can't stop the run, in my opinion. But they can really shut down the pass.
They beat San Diego, didn't they? And that talk about Saturday night games. Wasn't that a Saturday night playoff game? Didn't Kading miss a field goal?
Yeah. I wagered on Marty Schottenheimer in that game. It was the last time ever.
Right.
I think it's a nice matchup. A lot of Jets fans doing a lot of crowing right now.
Yeah.
I get a lot of emails, a lot of in-your-face emails this weekend, which I'll tell you, I didn't like.
Okay, but two teams advanced. For sure, you would say who? Which two teams are you most confident in advancing? New Orleans and Indy.
I think Arizona's defense is awful. Like it really shocked me if New Orleans, this team that was just putting up points left and right, all of a sudden couldn't score 40 points against that offense or that defense. I would say at gunpoint, I like the only home team I love is New Orleans.
Wow, I mean, this is supposed to be the week where you could pick two bye teams for sure to advance. Mm-hmm. It's not like that anymore. It's really weird.
Well, you have to go. Go lick your wounds because we got to bring in Lombardi.
Yeah.
I mean, I get to start playing in my sub. Maybe I'll have somebody. Maybe I'll have Jared come on and we can talk about it.
We're really not doing the Pro Bowl. I don't have another team.
The Pro Bowl's earlier this year.
I know. It's
January 31st Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
All right, Cousin Sal.
Yeah. All right, cheater.
All right.
I got your info here
Yeah.
before you head off. The Vikings got two extensions on the deadline. They still had to move 3,100 seats. Not very good. Also, only 55% of their season ticket holders chose to buy playoff tickets.
That was last year.
I believe so. This was the Eagles game.
Yeah, I think that's going to have a lot of I like the Cowboys. I think I'm going 4-0 this week.
Good. You and Chad Millman should go sit in the front on the 50-yard line again.
Talk to you later.
See ya.
All right, let's bring in Mike Lombardi from National Football Post. He's on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, and he's a man that I did not listen to last week, as he told me that he loved Dallas, this Eagles matchup. He just thought they were better. I didn't listen. He told me that he liked the Jets. He thought they could win the game. I didn't listen. And he told me that – what was the other one you liked?
I like the Cardinals.
Yeah, I just didn't listen to you. I didn't listen to you at all, and you know what? I'm ashamed. I hang my head in shame.
Well, we have to bounce back this weekend because this weekend last year we both had a disaster.
I went 0-4. I've had 2-0-4s on my resume in the last 2 years. Maybe I should retire. Maybe I'm like Andy Reid. Maybe I'm like the Reid McNabb era.
Or maybe you should give somebody else the red flag like Marvin Lewis. Maybe perhaps that would be an idea, huh?
You know what? I would do that pick over again. Marvin Lewis loses both challenges in about 5 minutes. The Sanchez... They're begging him to make plays. He actually does. Shane Graham misses two field goals. I think if they play that game 10 times, I think the Bengals could have won 5.
Well, you know, this is one of the things I truly believe in the National Football League. Missed field goals should count as turnovers. And, you know, as close as the game was, the Bengals were -4 in the turnover takeaway if you count the two missed field goals.
Right.
And
they were terrible missed field goals, 35 and 28.
I know. And all the Bengals really needed was just one receiver who could make a play.
Yeah.
Just one.
Well, did you think Caldwell fell on his head? He wasn't the same after that.
No. And they didn't really do anything to help him. They didn't get in stacked formations. You know, yesterday I thought Ken Wisenhunt called the best game in a long time in terms of offensive football. They only had 5 third downs in that game, the Arizona Cardinals. It's like he played in Canada. It was like CFL rules.
Right.
You know, and so, but he was in those stack formations, and the Bengals really didn't do much to help themselves, really.
The Pats rolled over. You agree?
I think the Pats are clearly in a transitional state, and I think it was the best thing. As a Patriot fan, you should be absolutely delighted that the Patriots lost the game.
Explain.
I'm going to tell you why.
Yeah.
Because had they won the game, you and I both know, and all Patriot Nation knows, they weren't going to win the Super Bowl.
No, they were going to lose to San Diego, but I thought we could
– But
to roll over at home is unacceptable.
But it's acceptable in this sense. The Patriots now, if we go to the uncapped year in the National Football League, which all signs indicate we're headed there, the final eight teams wouldn't be allowed to sign free agents. You'd only be allowed to replace free agents you lost. So it really would have hindered the Patriots offseason in terms of adding, say, like a Julius Peppers or any other great player out there. They couldn't have added to their team, and they would have been stuck with this kind of stuck-in-the-mud team. By losing the game, it keeps them out of the final eight, and it puts them in position to use all that cap room that they have, all their resources that they have. They're one of the lowest caps of any team going into 2010. And it gives them a chance to actually spend some money and rebuild the team. I think it was the greatest thing that ever happened to the Patriots.
So you think they threw the game?
I didn't say they threw the game, but I think there's a silver lining in the game.
Hey, look.
And I think it's predicated on the rules, because the final eight would have hindered them from making any progress.
Look, if it came out that they did throw the game, I wouldn't be shocked after what I saw. It was the most unimaginative game plan they could have come up with. There was no urgency. Sal and I just talked about this. I thought it was ironic that on 4th and 2, down 24-7, right around midfield, that they punted this time with a lot more urgency than you had in the Colts game. And by the way, if the logic at going for it on 4th and 2 against the Colts was that your defense couldn't stop Indy, were we stopping Baltimore?
Well, I think the fact here is the Patriots, who have made a career, made a dynasty of forcing teams to play left-handed, taking away what you do best and making you do something else. Yesterday on that field, they couldn't take away what the Ravens could only do, which is run the ball. And I think Phil Simms hit the nail on the head at the end of the half when he said the three runs, when they had them pinned back there, they could have easily gotten the ball back, maybe gotten a field goal, made it 24-10 at the half, with the ball coming out in the second half, 24-17 if we get things going. Now we got a game. The Patriots couldn't stop three consecutive runs. They couldn't handle it.
I thought he was foolish to say that. because they hadn't shown any inclination that they could stop the Ravens on three plays in a row. And on top of that, you know, if that punt doesn't, whatever happened, and the Ravens could have challenged it, they should have got the ball back. But that really should have been like a 31-0 first half.
The game was over in the first play of the game.
Yeah. I don't know. It was an embarrassing effort. Let me ask you this, though. How many blue chippers do the Pats have? We talked about blue chippers a lot at the start of the season. Now you have Welker with a torn ACL and an MCL. Do we even see him next year? I don't know. If we see him, is he 70%, 75%? I don't think he'll be the same guy. Brady has not been the same guy since, 2007. He certainly, you know, watching him pass up a chance to run, put his head down and run the end zone yesterday told me that this guy is legitimately hurt. Lost Seymour, probably going to lose Vince Wilfork. How many blue chippers does this team have?
Well, I think they obviously have enough room to keep Vince Wilfork, and they have. And with the uncapped year, you get two designations, so they'll keep Vince Wilfork. And obviously, they've got a lot of work to do. I think they have work to do in all three areas. I think.
Hold on 1 second, though. They've proven that they won't overpay past their price for whatever they think the guy is worth. What if?
Well, they might be forced to do it. They may be forced to do it now. They may have to rearrange their thinking. One thing.
It's all, but it's never been a force to do a team. They've always
Been humiliated before. You know, fear does the work of reason, and they've never been humiliated before. And they were humiliated yesterday. They were embarrassed, and they're going to have to retool. They're going to have to figure out how they're going to fix this thing. I mean, look. How can you be any good when Junior Seau is still on the field for you in a playoff game?
I wrote about this in September, and I just kind of spelled out, like, there's a chance we're in real trouble here with this team. We have not had good drafts. It's unclear if Belichick is still throwing 99 miles an hour anymore. Brady's still hurt. Like, you know, this really could be the final season. I was hoping it wasn't true, but I don't know if I trust Belichick to find the right guys.
Well, I think ultimately if you trust him enough to win three Super Bowls, you will. And I think the one thing about Belichick that I've known from being around him is he relishes in these opportunities. And I think he's got to go back to the drawing board. They got to recreate themselves on offense. I think when you look at the Saints offensively, when you look at the Cowboys offensively, when you look at the Arizona Cardinals and you look at the Packers, there's a little bit more two backs. There's a little bit more diversity. I think the Patriots have become too simplistic in what they do. They're almost run and shootish in terms of their style of offense. And I don't think it's going to work. I think they got to get back to being a tougher, more physical football team up front, and they've got to be able to move Brady around. Since he won't move, they're going to have to move him with boots and nakeds and run different kind of schemes. I think they need to change their thought process.
I trust 48-year-old Belichick to fix this. I'm not sure if I trust 58-year-old Belichick to fix this.
Well, the one thing about him is he's got a lot of energy, and I think he's got a lot of determination, and I think that loss is an embarrassment, and he will take it personally, and I think that's a good thing.
58-year-old coach, quarterback who I think is going to be 33 next season.
But Kurt Warner's taught us this. Kurt Warner's taught us that age and quarterbacks, and Brett Favre the same, age you become better, and I think he can become better. I think it's just refining and redefining what they need to do. They have to change what they do offensively. They can't just keep coming out running the option routes and doing the things they did. They're stale. People know it. I mean, you could hear it through the television. The Ravens were calling rabbit. They knew when it was run. You could hear they were playing their plays, and I think that's become a problem for them.
I thought it was borderline embarrassing that they didn't have any wrinkles for that game. And they were just like, you know what? Welker's out. We'll put Edelman in there. We're going to do the same thing. We're going to go down in flames doing what we've been doing. You know, I think you watch in Green Bay, I thought there was an urgency that the Packers had that they did not want to go down, you know, without a fight. And they did some things and they took some chances. And I thought the Pats rolled over.
Yeah, I think the Pats had the attitude that, hey, we showed up like the boxer. You know, we showed up, we should win this fight, and clearly the other team was fighting and executing much harder. It wasn't a close game. And I think that sense takes away all false sense of security, and it puts the Patriots on high alert on how they're going to have to repair it. And it goes back to my beginning comment. By being not in the Final Eight, they have the ability to go out and repair it.
All right, well, do a blog post about the whole Final Eight thing, because I want to see exactly how this is spelled out and how big of an advantage that is.
I don't totally
understand all the mechanics on that. Let's talk about the matchups. So we got – I thought it worked out great for the Jets getting the Chargers instead of the Colts. What do you think?
Well, you know, I'll say this. North Turner does a great job of picking up pass protections. and that's something you're going to have to be able to do, picking up the blitzes with his protections. If you're going to beat Rex Ryan, you got to be able to block his blitzes, and the Chargers prove they can do that. And then I think the other advantage that the Chargers have is Revis can only guard one guy. And so if he goes to Vincent Jackson, Malcolm Floyd's bigger than any of these corners for the Jets, and I think the Chargers can throw the ball. They got a problem matching up on Antonio Gates. I think this is a tough game for the Jets. The Jets have to be able to throw the ball effectively in the game to win, and I don't know if they can do it.
You don't think that they can shut down that pass a little bit and try to make Tomlinson beat him?
Well, I think anytime you look at Tomlinson isn't even going to be, you know, it's going to be screens and draw. Tomlinson's not going to be a factor in the game. That's the good thing for the Chargers. They're not going to kid themselves in thinking they're going to try to.
Really? You don't? You think? I mean, how many carries do you think he gets? Like 10?
I think they're all just kind of change of pace. They're like change ups in pitchers in baseball. They're just kind of just to keep you honest.
Well, but from what we've seen against the Jets, it seems like you can really run the ball on them, though.
Well, I think there's times, but you got to spread them out to do it. And I think that's the one advantage Norv has. He'll know how to attack the team, and he'll be able to attack what gives Rex Ryan problems. And they throw the deep ball. And if you play a blitzing team, you got to have long ball hitters. You're not going to go 12 plays down the field. They're going to make a negative play at some point. So the worst kind of team for a blitzing team to play is a team that can hit the home run, and that's the Chargers.
So you think a lot of Sproles this week is here?
I think a lot of Sproles. I think a lot of Antonio Gates. I think those are the matchups that the Jets have problems handling.
The Bengals had no defensive line at all, really no receivers, and I thought the quarterback was abysmal. It was easily the worst performance by anybody this weekend. Did we learn that? Can the Jets actually take anything from that game?
Well, the Jets are all about their offensive line. I think they like Sean Green more than they like Thomas Jones. I think they like Sean Green's power. And the Jets have to play a slow-tempo game. They're going to try to not turn it over. They're going to be very conservative because they don't want Mark Sanchez to make a mistake. And they're all about turnovers. If they don't, they feel like if they don't turn the ball over, they win the game. Now, what's going to be interesting for the Jets is if they make a turnover, how their team reacts to it. Because all they've been preaching about is we can't turn it over. And when you preach that so often and you make the one mistake, the air comes out of the tire.
So they gained a little confidence in Sanchez, but more importantly, they learned that Sean Green is their guy.
I think so. I think he really is their guy.
You know whose guy I wish he was?
You wish he was a Patriots.
Yeah, well, it's not like we didn't have 17 different chances to take him. We had a first round and two second rounders. We made 47 trades and somehow didn't get a running back.
Yeah, well.
And we went into another year with Kevin Falk and old guys, old retreats from other teams, and Lawrence Maroney, who we knew after his first year sucked. I don't know. I don't know about your boy.
I can't disagree that there's got to be an overhaul up there. I can't disagree with that.
Hey, here's the analogy I would use. I was fine with my dad shoveling when he was 50. But when my dad at age 62 says, yeah, I was outside shoveling for 4 hours, I get scared. He's like, yeah, Dad, you're 62. Get somebody to shovel for you. And Belichick is going to be 58 next year. I'm not sure I want him shoveling for 5 hours a day anymore. Get some help. How about that? Indy and Baltimore.
Well, you know, I think when you play, when you have time off and you kind of, you can't simulate the physicality that Baltimore displayed yesterday on the field. And I think this is going to be at a disadvantage to the Colts. And I don't think it has anything to do with taking the rest of the season off. I think it's hard to come off a week and then have to play a physical team like the Ravens. And the Ravens are their own worst enemy. I mean, they just beat themselves. They do stupid penalties. You know, they do dumb things at certain times. And really, at the end of the day, you know, they're really a hot team. Had they not lost their left tackle in Gaither and had to move Michael Orr over there and play O'Neal Cousins, they would have beaten Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh. And so they're just kind of, they're flowing into it. And I think ultimately they know who they are now. Since the Green Bay loss, they realize they have to run the football and be a physical team, and their defense is playing much better than they were earlier in the season. So I think this is a tough game for the Colts because I think the Ravens have a sense of confidence and they know how to play on the road, and they feel like they can play effectively on the road.
I wrote in Friday's column that I thought the Ravens desperately needed to win a game like the way they won, the way they beat the Patriots. They were 25-1 heading into the playoffs, and I thought they were the most interesting Super Bowl long shot pick because if they did win a game convincingly, out of anybody, they had the chance to gain the momentum and actually become a real contender. Do you think they're there?
Yeah, I think they definitely gain momentum. I think momentum's interesting. I think you can gain it in a game. And I wrote about this morning. You know, you talk about it. When I was at the 49ers in 86, we led the Giants 17-0 at the half. And in the third quarter, the Giants came out in 86, and they scored 21 points, and they dominated the rest of the game, and they never looked back. Now, I equated that to the Cowboys the way they're playing right now. going into New Orleans, dominating that game, finding themselves in that game. They haven't looked back since. And I think at the end of the day, the Cowboys and the Ravens are two teams that have found themselves in this playoff.
I kind of agree. You know, a reader sent, I saved this email, and I don't think I used it in Friday's column, but what Dallas did when they went into New Orleans and they played at the top level against what was the top team at the time, it seems like that's the most important thing that can happen to a football team, because you've now proven, hey, we can actually play with these guys. Maybe yep. we're good. And it seems like that transformed them to some degree.
It really did. It made them – and they beat a team that had speed. It beat a team that could run. It beat them in every facet of the game, and they demonstrated that they could. And the more they played Philly, the farther they got away from Philly. I mean, Philly was getting worse as each game was being played. If they played next Sunday, they'd probably beat Philly by 40.
I think another good example of that is the Giants in 2007. When they hung with the Pats in Week 17, I think it kind of made them realize, hey, wait a second, we might actually have something here. Now, last week I asked you if McNabb and Reed were, you know, if that was it, if they got blown out. You said, oh, no, they're coming back. You still feel that way?
I don't see how they can't bring Donovan back. The Donovan is the great, you know, he gets the blame for everything in Philadelphia. He would have been sacked 10 times in that game if he couldn't move around. I mean, he saved that team so much. Now, he didn't play good at all, don't get me wrong, but nobody played good against the Cowboys down there. And if Jason Peters is the Pro Bowl left tackle, I'd hate to think, you know, who finished second. I mean, my Lord, he didn't block anybody. And he struggled. So, you know, I think McNabb, the bigger issue in Philadelphia is their defense. When you talk about blue-chip players, they have one, Trent Cole. The rest of their defensive line, their linebackers are just very average players. And the Eagles need to figure out, instead of blaming McNabb for all their problems, they gave up over 25 points the last five games of the season. Yeah. They couldn't stop anybody. And the only way they play good defense is when they get the lead. They don't play good defense when they have to play from behind because they can't hang in there. And until they realize that fact, you can blame Donovan all you want. Donovan's part of the solution, not part of the problem. Their defense is a huge part of their problem.
I'm almost afraid to ask, but who are the Pats' defensive blue chippers?
Well, you know, it used to be Wilfolk until I thought he got way too heavy and he's on the ground. I mean, yeah. He's like the Leaning Tower. He just plops down.
You
I thought Ty Warren used to be a blue chip. I think Mayo, and I wrote about this today, Mayo's not the same player this year that he was last year. It looks like you and I can beat him in a race. And so, you know, when you start adding up in the front seven, they don't really have anybody. You know, Jarvis Green didn't play to the level that he'd played in the past. I think there's a lot of question marks in terms of how many blues they actually do have.
And Merriweather?
Merriweather, you know, Merriweather made a play week four of the season against Baltimore, saved a touchdown. They had a double move over to Mason, and Merriweather came from all across the field and batted the ball down. It was one of the best plays I've seen on tape all year. And yesterday, him not being able to catch Ray Rice told me he's beat up and wore down.
Yeah. Well, I'm even more depressed now. Saints and the Cards.
This game's real simple. I mean, they should just play the college overtime rules in this game. Because put the ball on the 25, and whichever team can hold the other team to a field goal is probably going to win. This game's all about red zone defense. Because yeah. both teams are going to move the ball at will on each other. Both teams have really good play callers. Both teams have really good offenses. Both teams have receivers. They can run them different out there. I think it's going to be a great offensive game, and I don't think there's any way you can slow the game up. And the way the Cardinals are playing, you talk about a defining moment. I mean, they played yesterday in a way that where, you know, typically you get a lot of third downs, 16 third downs. I mean, look at the Patriots' third downs. Yesterday they had five, and they converted three of five. Didn't go to fourth down to get any of them either.
Saints' defense is a lot better, though, than Green Bay's defense.
Well, you know, you would think so. You would think so, but I don't know if the Saints' defense can match these receivers.
I don't trust Arizona for some reason. I thought in Chad Moman's column this week, one of the Vegas guys had a great comment about them about, I wish we could bet on Arizona after seeing the first 5 minutes of their game. And it is one of those teams that you know right away whether they showed up or not. And Sunday, obviously, they showed up. It's one of those things you talk yourself into them, and then 3 minutes in New Orleans, the crowd's going nuts, and Warner looks rattled, and that's it. It's over. So it seems like you like Arizona, New Orleans to come down to the wire.
Yeah, I think it has to come. I mean, it has to. I mean, they're just too good offensively to not. I think Beanie Wells is a huge factor in the game for Arizona. He gives them a physical presence that I thought he would give them when they drafted him, and it makes it tough. And he helps their run. He helps their passing game because he's a load to handle. And I thought the play calling by Ken was sensational. So I think this is a tough challenge for New Orleans, and I think that it's going to be it'll be a great up-tempo type game.
You like it sounds like you like Baltimore Indy to come down to the wire.
I think so. I think Baltimore can play with them. I think Baltimore's got a sense of confidence, and I think it's going to take the first half is going to take a little bit of time for the Colts to meet the physical challenges that Baltimore presents. And Baltimore's getting healthy now.
San Diego, you think, is going to blow out the Jets if they take a lead early?
I think if San Diego can make big plays, I think it's all going to come down to it. Blitz team, home run hitters, you got to find a way to make big plays. That's what San Diego does, and their receivers go up and get the ball.
In Dallas, Minnesota, you haven't really talked about Minnesota, but you love the way Dallas is playing, and I know you're not a Brad Childress fan, so you have a bad feeling about this one, I'm guessing.
Well, you know, I mean, Dallas is got all the elements to give the Vikings trouble. They can play with power. They can meet the physical size of the Vikings' offensive line. Their offensive line can handle the power of the Vikings' defensive line. I mean, obviously, the home field, the crowd noise is going to be an indicator. Flozell Adams worries me on the road in a loud stadium. He's got hearing problems, having to block Jared Allen. They're going to have to do a really good job of chipping and double him because we know Flozell up there is going to have two or three false starts and have a couple holding penalties, which could derail the Cowboys' offense. So, you know, I think it's going to be a good game. I think if it was played in Dallas, I would love the Cowboys. I think it's going to be a little bit closer than it should be because the one thing the Cowboys have proven is they can match up on receivers. They can match up on all these receivers they've played, and this Viking group of receivers is not as good as the Saints or the Eagles.
And they've also proven they can rush the passer, get pressure on him consistently.
And if McKinney plays like he did against Julius Peppers, it'll be an ugly game.
Can Minnesota run the ball in Dallas?
You know, I think Dallas probably wants Minnesota to run the ball. I think that's probably what they would want them to do. I don't think they can. Minnesota will struggle to win the matchups just like every other team struggles against the Cowboys, is winning against Jay Ratliff, winning against Spencer, and then winning against Ware. Those are tough matchups to handle.
Who do you like in a checkers match between Wade Phillips and Brad Childress? Not chess, checkers.
I'm going to go Wade. I'm going to go Wade because the Vikings have yet to prove to me that they can fix the problem of covering kicks and covering punts. And special teams and field position is going to matter in this game.
Mike Lombardi, National Football Post. I will be reading you all week, figuring out if you've changed your mind on all this stuff. You sound pretty convinced in these four games.
Well, I got to watch the tape. I'll be back Wednesday at Showtime inside the NFL to watch the tapes, and I'll get a better. But, I mean, that's my sense. And I think, you know, ultimately the games, the way teams play, especially in this round, you know, determine what's going to happen. I think sometimes you get caught up in a moment like, the Jets have. It was a nice story, but I'm not sure the Bengals are a great team.
All right, that's it for part one of the Mega Playoff Podcast. Come back for part two with Aaron Schatz from FootballOutsiders.com and Chad Millman from ESPN The Magazine. Until then.
Target the center.
Whoa!
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.
You laughed, you cried, you turned up the sound repeatedly, and now it's all over. This concludes another installment of the BS Report. And with all the talk about sports, Bill Simmons neglected to mention this important just-breaking news. Subway is home to the famous $5 footlong, so celebrate your favorite Subway famous $5 footlong, like the classic BLT or the Big Bowl Black Forest ham and cheese. All stacked your way with the meats, cheeses, and fresh crisp veggies you love.